Great. Well, I'm delighted to be here. And again, I'd like to thank the organizing committee for the opportunity to be here. Following from some of Scott's comments, thinking about the contributions of Dr. Gee, I'm one of the types of people that met him mostly through the literature. And his gift to many of us in different disciplines — I'm a classically trained hydrogeologist — was an opportunity to see into the world of the Vados Zone and make tentative steps into it. And this talk today is very much related to a very tentative step into that Vados Zone. And that relates to moving — I can get our mouse here — from moving just above that water table where I normally live up into this very complex zone underneath an agricultural field, but not going too far. So I'm going to stick right here where these tile drains are, right at the interface between the water table and the capillary fringe. And this work is primarily was completed by my former PhD student, Steve Frey, who you'll meet just right after this talk, with a lot of contribution from Brewster Conant. So I'll just apologize to Dr. Gee in this sense, that instead of being in a very dry environment where he's done most of his work, I'm going to talk a little bit about an area that does its very best as an unsaturated zone to be as saturated as possible. So this is back up north where we're from, and a group of us are from in southern Ontario, and an area here that's you might consider to be semi-humid to humid, quite wet, very significant variability in seasonal conditions, summer, winter, frozen conditions, and snow melt. Majority of southern Ontario completely developed as agricultural cropland. And, of course, the subsurface materials here being glacial, so quite a bit different than the conditions that Scott just talked about. So tile drains, as most people know, function primarily to augment the cropping time and conditions in areas that are quite wet, where water tables are shallow. So typical benefits is basically just removing excess soil moisture, keeping the water table down through the root zone so that the crop can survive and flourish. But of course, some intrinsic issues related to that are that the tiles sit right at this water table, very shallow, receiving agrochemicals that might be leaching through this weathered, somewhat open, very often macroporous soil, and the tiles then skimming that water off, which could be quite concentrated, and directing it right into a surface water source. So we see down here after the application of manure. On top of that, from a more pragmatic point of view, the tile networks can essentially mine nutrients off fields over a period of time. So part of the question is, how significant is that from an environmental point of view? And secondly, what does it mean in terms of nutrient loss? So is it important? Well, in southern Ontario, where I'm from, almost 70% of the arable land is tile drained. So it plays a very significant role in sort of controlling the hydrologic conditions and dynamics of land that's under agricultural development. So a huge portion of our province, in the southern part of the province here, is tile drained. And on top of that, Ontario has a very large developed livestock industry. And if we just look at one aspect of it, hogs, which is quite a large industry in Ontario, produces significant amount of manure that has to be managed, and typically that has to be applied on the field in a series of different stages. Very common for fall application to occur of liquid manure. Here's just a photograph of a typical application. And of course, as you saw from that diagram of the tile distributions, certainly over top of tile-drained lands. So a question you might ask then is, how important is this type of an application in a fall condition? Why are the fall conditions specifically of interest, which we'll look at in a moment, from a point of view of environmental impact and a loss of nutrient? So we'll look at both of those just briefly here. So to get at that, one might consider the conceptual model of how these tiles work. So again, not wanting to get too far away from the water table here, here's a tile functioning as a local drain, And what happens in terms of application of a agrochemical or a nutrient, for instance, at the ground surface here, it migrate down through the vadose zone, controlled, of course, by the soil conditions in that near-surface environment, often quite weathered, loaded with macropores. Other features that will control its mobility will be the dynamics of the recharge on the top of the surface. Keeping in mind, in Canada, we have such a wide seasonality, so this recharge condition is highly variable. We'll look at that in a moment. And the third sort of main component is the nature of the groundwater flow system below it. So depending on which way the regional flow is moving, the tile will capture more or less of what's been applied at the surface. So it's a combination of three of those will dictate what the impact or capture zone of the tile will be. So timing, soil properties, and this concept of the regional groundwater flow field. So the research challenge that we're looking at, and today I'll present some results from an initial experiment in looking at this, these dynamics, was could we somewhat quantify the losses of nutrients from a typical application of manure in the fall period over this dynamic tile drain lands. And specifically what I want to look at to show you some results from are the sort of implications for how far away you've applied this manure or fertilizer or nutrient relative to the position of the tile. Secondly, how significant is the macroporosity in determining what arrives at the tile and when it arrives? And finally, can we look at climatic variability to understand something about what happens during the course of the year? So once this nutrient moves into the subsurface, where does it go after it redistributes, and does it stay available or does it migrate? So the experiment first required us to look for a site to do this type of a field tracer test. And we developed this test as part of Steve's research without being brave enough to actually use liquid swine manure. We ended up using some surrogate tracers, so looking at some conservative tracers with the idea of trying to get at the flow and transport characteristics and properties initially, and probably going back with more detailed work with actual liquid swine manure in the future. So we use these as proxies, if you will, for the soluble nutrient component that would be coming off that liquid manure. And secondly, a typical thing that happens in the fall, which is one of the reasons why this tends to be a high-risk scenario, is that we get typical rainstorms and precipitation events in the fall when the evapotranspiration is extremely low. So recharge tends to be very, very high. Let's back up for a sec here. So we're going to look at the influence of a storm event after the nutrients have been applied and then track that over the course of an annual cycle. So we'll see how these tracers do during the year. And we'll do that basically by looking at a mass balance of what comes out of the tile that we monitor right next to where the tracer was applied. And I'll show you more about that experiment in a moment. But let me just look at the field site for a moment. So again, the site's sitting sort of in the middle of the Southern Ontario Peninsula, a long way from the Great Lakes, inland. It sits in an area, in this case, it's about 6 hectares, maybe 30 feet of topography up at the top here, migrating down to the lower part of the field. If you look from the air photo, there's a small drain that runs laterally along the edge of the field here. And the position that we've selected here is down at the lower part of the slope. Conditions here, as we'll see with the multi-level monitoring wells, are upward flow of groundwater or discharging conditions. And if you look carefully, use a little bit of imagination, you can see one of the principal tiles there with very slightly lighter soil texture or color on it, illustrating where that type of drain is occurring. You have to use a little imagination. You can see a few more in there. In that lower topographic position, the soil tends to be quite fine, so it's run off down into the lower area, poorly drained and very conducive to holding and having macroporous features in it. And it was systematically tiled about 25 years ago. So imperatively, I have to give a brief description of the soils, and the next talk will look more into the details at this particular site. But just to give you an idea, that's what the matrix would look like here, hydraulic conductivity somewhere around 10 centimeters per day. Load it with these types of features, and they're traced here by infiltrating a blue dye down into the subsurface in a variety of different methods. And here's the culprit that made that particular macropore sitting right there. So when they're not home, these tubes function as direct conduits, in many cases directly into the tile. So imagine that those things are continuous. So down to the water table, these macropore features are vary in density, but are fairly continuous, and we find them all the way down. We'll look at more detail on that. So a bulk hydraulic conductivity relatively high when you take into account the macropores. And as I mentioned, most of them are root holes and wormholes, a sort of circular tube type environment, mostly vertical, decreasing in density with depth. So here's the experimental plot. I'll show you how Steve designed his experiment then. The first thing was to find a tile line. You can see some from the air photographs, but you can pick them up with geophysics and a variety of other methods. So we located one of the tile drains down in that lower part of the area, the first part, installed a network of groundwater monitoring wells to get an idea of where the flow was moving. So the flow was moving not perpendicular to the tile directly, but more or less perpendicular to the orientation of the lateral stream. So the tile system sits on top of this regional flow system that doesn't necessarily all indicate capture by the tile network itself, which is not surprising. And the multi-level wells indicate to us that there's an upward trend of groundwater flow at the site. Again, more or less what we would consider. That's kind of this midpoint between where this tile starts and the next one is laid up here. So the next stage then was to apply these surface tracers. So what we used were two different distinct tracers, bromide tracer and a chloride tracer, applied about 2.5 meters or so, from the edge and lateral edge of the tile, two distinct tracers with the hope of being able to look at this capture with being able to see the two tracers arrive at different times. So finally, down at the far end here, the tile was cut into, and we had a technique for measuring flow and capturing water samples, and we had a met station on site. So here's the view out in the field, and you don't want to try this at home. This is applying a solute tracer to the field with sprinkling cans here, so the bromide patch in the first part next to the tile, and then chloride the next patch over. Applied at about the rate at which a liquid manure would be put on typically on a field, and concentration just to give you an idea. A very concentrated tracer, so it could be traced in this dilute environment. And following the application of the tracer, we ran this precipitation event on top of it, so a simulated rainfall event that would happen after the liquid manure was applied. Typical return period of about 3 years, 5 millimeters per hour over a 9-hour period, pushing that tracer and getting it to start to move. And at the far end, of course, this is the heart of the work. There's the tile coming out here. There's a tube that runs into it so it can capture samples for analysis of concentration. And then a very carefully installed pump that functions then on a little float that would allow us to get the flow rate and return it back to the tile. So that together gave us a mass balance or a mass flow through the tile. So let me just show you some of the results from the test then. So the first plot here shows you the response and how hydraulically active the tile is. So prior to the application of the tracer, the tile was draining here at a certain rate, and during the entire year, this tile is active. So because of that groundwater flow, it bleeds a little water continuously. A precipitation event here caused the tile flow to go up significantly. Then it starts to flow down again, and then we applied that irrigation event, and you can see a very significant spike in the flow in the tile over a relatively short-lived time period, which you'd expect because we only applied the water over a 9x9 area. And that area there represents about 15% of the applied water that was captured in that first peak as it came through, so quite a reactive tile drain. Now, if we look at the tracer as it moves through here, we've got this picture shows the red line is the bromide tracer, and down at the bottom the green is the chloride. So first of all, what we see is that within an hour that surface applied bromide arrives at the tile. So anticipating that that's made its way down through this relatively directly connected macropore network, a small portion of it arrives right at the tile immediately from being applied right next to the tile. That concentration ramps right up. Here we stop the irrigation. It stays up for a short period of time and then comes down as redistribution occurs, So the precipitation event stops, redistributes, and then it starts to go back in a slow sort of chronic release of bromide. Again, nothing coming out of chloride. So this peak happens a little bit after, after the application of the irrigation event. So let's move that up now one more step and look at it from sort of a medium range time frame. So again, we've got the irrigation event is the little blue rectangle here. The tile discharge kicks in shortly and then drops off, and you can see for a period of about 2 weeks that the flow in the tile remains relatively low and consistent, even though there's several precipitation events that happen. Not until we have a very significant event does the tile start to flow again, so indicating that there's certainly a threshold on what that precipitation event has to be before it'll start kicking flow into the tile at a significant rate. And the same kind of condition we see in terms of total mass and bromide. So there's the peak in bromide and concentration, and the blue line now is the total mass. So after the application of the irrigation event, significant mass comes out of the ground, about 7% of the mass. We see on the far side is the mass. Then a very slow, chronic release of that applied tracer until the precipitation event, so sort of an extreme event, blasts into the subsurface, and a lot of mass is released, and then it slows down again. And so you can see the impact of the irrigation event and a natural precipitation event over that course of about a 2 to 3 week period. So after 3 weeks, we'd collected about 20% of the applied bromide. Again, none of the chloride had showed up yet. So one of the things that seems to be happening in southern Ontario more frequently are sort of extreme changes in temperature. So it's very typical nowadays to have a complete melt in January. So it just happened to occur during this tracer test, where the snowpack that had built up from November to early January melted in a period of a couple of days. So here's an ephemeral stream flowing across the ground surface. So a massive recharge event as a result of a warming that occurred in January that tends to be occurring more frequently now. Perfect. So let's look at what impact that had. So here's temperature here. We move into early January. We exceed zero. So over a time period of about 10 days, it's about 3 degrees C. Precipitation during the course of it, there was a rainfall event that was quite a strong spike. And the tile, of course, starts to pick up the recharge event. It picks up the precipitation event. So a significant increase in tile flow as a result of that January melt. So what you'd consider sort of an extreme hydrologic event. Bromide concentrations initially went up high and then were diluted as that meteoric water and melt water came into the system, but a significant increase in remobilization of mass. So these events in the middle of winter really pushed the mass out. At the end of the day, in 10 days, we captured another 20% of that applied tracer, but virtually no chloride. So still, 2 meters away from it, that chloride had not arrived at the tile. So the last couple of slides I'll show you is this now goes further on through the sequence. This is 6 months of time record showing the ramping up of the capture of the bromide. And you can see that by the time we got to the position where you would be planting, all of the applied soluble tracer had been captured by the tile within a couple of meters of the tile itself. So we had captured close to 100% of it as best we could measure in the tile flux itself. And the chloride concentrations were just about the same as background. So we wanted to look a little bit as to where that tracer was. So the last thing we did was go out to the field and core on a very systematic grid down just below the water table, took those cores back to the labs, cut them up, measured the chloride and bromide, and found that the bromide indeed was a tiny little cloud still just in the top of the vadose zone, not very much of it downstream as the flow was going across here. But the chloride now was just starting to arrive at the tile, so it had spread itself out through and underneath the bromide pulse, and it's just starting to reach the tile after an entire year. So our conclusions now were that in application of the tracer in the fall, as we would with liquid manure, we get a real spike arriving at the tile. Now, in that particular case, probably a high concentration, probably high toxicity, as it would arrive to a small stream. Very short-lived, though, in terms of a total mass release from it being quite low. Then, from that point on, the release of the nutrient or the tracer was quite chronic until we had these peak events of precipitation, including this extreme winter melt that tends to be occurring as a result of more climate variability. So what we can now see is that although there's very little loss within 2 meters or so of the, just within the immediate vicinity of the tile, beyond that we didn't lose very much. Still, if you take that in terms of separation of about 15 meters between tiles, you could lose easily 20% of your nutrients. So this poses a potential acute effect to surface water and a substantial loss in nutrients. Anyway, so that's the talk for now, and I'd like to thank the Ontario Minister of the Environment, Ontario Pork, who worked with us, and NSERC, and the family who led us on the farm, which is incredibly important, as we all know, working on farms. Thank you very much.
We're pretty short on time again, but if you have any particular burning question.
Yeah. Reason for using two tracers?
Yeah,
so the real reason was to be able to see distinctive arrivals of the different tracer themselves. So if we'd used just bromide the whole time, we wouldn't have been able to see the arrival of the second tracer. So specifically doing it sort of colorimetrically like that gave us a unique way of determining whether the distance of beyond a couple of meters away from the tile actually arrived in the tile or not. So the hope was to see the distinction between the two of them applied on the surface. Anything else? Time. Why did it not get flushed out? So, I mean, probably when you look at the vertical gradients, they maintain themselves upward throughout the whole course of the year. Even under those heavy recharge events, the lateral recharge a little bit upslope sort of overrides the amount that infiltrates locally, and it keeps the upward gradient. So that package of mass stays relatively close to the water table cap fringe and in that area. So it migrates slightly laterally, but didn't go very deep because there's always an upward tendency to keep it in place. And that's typical of tile drain lands in most parts of, certainly, southern Ontario. Good. Thanks.